Keystone Church family, you guys continue to blow us away with your generosity. Keystone Church, you guys provided over 90 boxes, because there's still bags coming in this week that are going right back into the community to help our foster children.
Welcome to Keystone Conversations, our podcast on the topics and issues important to the Keystone family. Our hope is to give insight, wisdom, and resources as you press on to know and follow Jesus. I'm Brent Minter, the lead pastor of Keystone, and today for our episode, we have an incredible special guest, Mrs. Betty Baker. She is our local outreach coordinator. Betty, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Brent.
Man, I love this moment because I know you don't want to be talking in a microphone, but we're going to talk about something today that you give primary leadership over, and it's such an important thing for our church. And today, we're going to have a special episode because for just a little bit here, for about 5-7 minutes, maybe we're just going to intro the topic of foster care, adoption, and ministering to the vulnerable in our context. And we're going to talk about that a little bit, Betty, but then we're actually going to kick to a story from our Keystone Story podcast of a foster family in our church. And we'll talk about that in just a second, but we're going to introduce why we care about that. And so, Betty, this is something that you think a lot about. You do a lot about, and Keystone really cares about a foster adoption and caring for the vulnerable. And so I want to kind of highlight how we do that. So this past weekend, if you would have walked into the lobby, what color bags would we have seen?
Yeah, Brent, our lobby was filled with orange bags. Keystone Church family, you guys continue to blow us away with your generosity. We're so excited to partner with different organizations in our community through our For Ankeny initiative to just provide support for those in foster care in the system as well as foster care families. So we partnered with these organizations to provide and meet real tangible needs that our foster kiddos and our foster families have these needs, and Keystone was able to provide and meet those needs.
Yeah, so walk us through that really quick, Betty. So most people get an orange bag and a sheet that says, get this, and then they come back. What happens next? Because there's a pile of things. Walk with me. What happens? Sunday's done. What happened next? How does that get to where it should be? And what are those organizations that this round of Four Ankeny supported?
Absolutely. So on Monday night, we had our connection groups come in and just really, they were the hands and feet of Jesus and unloading all the bags that you guys so generously brought and provided for our foster care families. So the Monday night connection groups unloaded the bags. We sorted things and organized them by organization, and then we boxed them all up for multiple organizations throughout our community. Those organizations include the Foster Squad, the Four Oaks, as well as Ellipsis. And so we also were able to bless several foster families within Keystone Church, which was really, really special. And so the connection groups, we worked together to do that. And last night made two big deliveries to Ellipsis and Foster Squad, which was really exciting. Keystone Church, you guys provided over 90 boxes, because there's still bags coming in this week that are going right back into the community to help our foster children.
Yeah. I think a couple of things, Betty, is this morning we came into an elder meeting. One of our elders was at that process last night, and they walked into one of those organizations, and there was like, hey, here's the section where you can put the supplies that you're bringing. And someone came and was like, excuse me, that's not enough space. And I think a little bit of an overwhelm for that person, insofar as like tears welling up in their eyes of just receiving the generosity of the Keystone people. And that's not all that's going on. Like, May is Foster Awareness Month, and that's actually why we're doing this in this season. We're coming into May. Talk about, we have an incredible opportunity, depending on when you're listening to this podcast, whether it'll still be available. The kind of equipping environment that we're having is called Living Out God's Will for the Vulnerable. It's an info session about foster and adoption and how we serve other vulnerable people who are vulnerable in our context. That's on May 5th, this Sunday, May 5th. Walk us through what's going to happen there and what someone could learn.
Yeah, absolutely, Brent. We are so excited to be bringing this info session to those who are interested in foster care, adoption, or just being part of a network of care for vulnerable families.
Yeah.
So we're going to kick off and talk about why this matters, right? Which is what we are kind of covering right yeah. now. And then bringing up some keystone families who've gone through the process. They have fostered, or they are currently in the process of fostering. They've adopted. And we're also bringing in some organizations such as Four Oaks and Together for Good that keystone attenders and members can actively take their next steps yeah. if they feel called to foster or to adopt or to be part of that network of care. Not only that, but we also want to be a church that walks alongside these families.
Yeah.
So what does it look like to serve a foster family within our church context? And so just walking away with some helpful tools and next steps of how do I take the next step?
Yeah, we've done this before, and actually a lot of foster families got cared for. We also got new foster families because of that. And so there's an incredible opportunity to learn. And that doesn't mean you're signing up to be a foster family. In fact, Together for Good is pre-fostering. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of opportunities for us to think about those vulnerable. And I just really, before we kick off into this story, want to just kind of why. Why do we care about these things? Why do we do these things? I think first and foremost, something you hear a lot in our sermons, we are made in the image of God, and humanity, life should be protected. You know, it's really clear as evangelical Christians, we stand for life, that all life matters from conception to death. And one of the things that we do care about, and we should care about as evangelicals, is abortion and making sure that that's not an option for folks. But often Christians are just known that we don't want to do that, but we're not interested or not known for getting in the race to helping those that are at very vulnerable stages, kids who don't have parents, who are wards of the states. This has always been a passion area of ours, Betty's. We've done these rounds for a long time, and all we want to do is, man, there's a lot of people who know and follow Jesus in our context, and we want to create a space to serve those who are serving children and vulnerable families in our community. But also call out people inside of Keystone. How is God calling you and your family to be a part? And so initiatives like this are so important. So thankful for your leadership, Betty. And man, praying that God would not just help us be a part of adoptions, but supporting fosters and adoptions, but also supporting the organizations that do that, and also like doing everything we can to think, how can we help serve vulnerable people in our context? So Betty, thanks for that. So Keystone, here's where it gets fun. You may not be aware of this, and hopefully you will at this moment. We have another podcast called Keystone Stories, where we just curate stories of people in the Keystone family walking through different seasons. So what we're going to do right now is play the last episode of Keystone Stories, and it's going to follow Jeremy and Karen Coons and their story of fostering. I think it's going to deeply encourage you. And so if you've not used to listening to that, make sure you go right now, and however you listen to your podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcast or however you else you listen to podcasts, subscribe to Keystone Stories as well. So as those stories come out, you'll hear more and more. So without further ado, check out this story from the Coons. I think it'll be a deep encouragement for you.
You start this journey thinking that you're taking care of these broken children, right? And I think through this process, you come to the realization that you're just as broken, right?
Yeah.
That we're all in need of a savior, that we're all in need of a lot more help than what we actually think. And so like that dependency that pushes us towards Christ, I think has been a lot stronger in my life because of that.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Keystone Stories Podcast, a place to share the stories God is writing in the lives of our church family. These are stories of transformation, joy, sorrow, pain, and healing. Stories told in the most difficult seasons, as well as seasons of incredible blessing. Stories you can't help but see the faithfulness of God within. As we listen, our prayer is that the church will respond in worship as we remember who Jesus is and all he has done in both the good and hard seasons of life.
When Jeremy and I first got married, or even beforehand, I had expressed to him a heart for adoption, and I don't exactly know in what capacity or way I thought that would happen someday, but had mentioned that as a desire of mine. And that grew and changed throughout the years, especially seeing, I remember going up to Ames and seeing a friend up there and seeing her adopted children from Africa and one from foster care. And I remember coming home and calling it a beautiful chaos. It was just great to see how they had taken children into their home and shown them love that they might not have seen. But I know that that wasn't
At the time when we had that conversation, I very distinctly remember saying, like, absolutely, there's no way that I'm going to do foster care or adoption. I know the challenges that can be there. I've had family in the past that have done this, and I just don't have any desire to do that. And so from there we had kind of moved on, and I had kind of forgotten about the conversation. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until we went to a Bible study a couple years later, where the connection group leaders were actually foster parents. They had done foster care for, I don't remember how many years, but they had a placement. And so throughout that year, we got to watch this family love on this kid. We got to see the challenges that were there. We got to see how they supported not only this child, but also the family behind it, and just the brokenness and ugliness that was there, and and how beautiful of a thing it actually was. And for me, anyways, it started changing my heart, right? And so we started asking questions within that Bible study. We started having more and more conversations geared around it, and realized the need that was actually there, right? So yeah. Central Iowa, like, I didn't realize, like, coming from a small town, like, in Iowa, I didn't realize the amount of need that there actually is across the board, like even in small towns. I think I was completely ignorant to the fact that it's all over the place, mm-hmm. That the brokenness is all over the place, and that the need is incredible all over the place. And I didn't realize the sheer quantity of numbers of kids that were out there that were in shelter because they didn't have a family to be able to come to.
Yeah. So I had started on more of the emotional side of things, and you had real life examples and stories in your own life that brought more the logical side. And so we were kind of meeting in the middle of, Jeremy was seeing more of the beauty in it, and I was starting to see more of the reality of it, that in entering into foster care, that wouldn't always look beautiful. It would have a lot of hardship. I met with friends who I knew were foster parents and asked them to give me the good, bad, and the ugly. I wanted to know the full picture of what we would be getting into if we did this. And knowing that we could not come into this and just save a child and life would be perfect, but there would probably forever be hardship within the foster care realm. And if we ever adopted, that there would forever be trauma probably in this child's life that we would be working through. And so soon after this, we went to a foster care introductory class, and I found out the basics of it, but walked away, I think a month or so later, probably found out we were pregnant. So we had to put that on hold for a while, and had friends that also attended that introductory class with us who did go straight into foster care and had kind of advised us to wait until our baby turned 3 before we hopped into it, just so she had a good grasp of what was going on. Not maybe a good grasp, but a little bit of a grasp of what was going on when we invited a child into our home. So
yeah, we could actually communicate to her. We could give her feedback. Yeah. And then if there was, you know, if there was anything that, you know, that wasn't good, right, that she'd be able to communicate that back to us, to at least to some degree, right? So it's not just some, like, kind of coming in blind with that.
Yeah. So when she turned 3, it was probably just a few months later that we were certified that December, and that's when our process started. So we finished our training classes and got our license, and the next day we received a call for a, I think he was 6 weeks old.
Yeah. Yeah. Keep in mind, we hadn't even got our license yet. We were told that it was in the mail. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just that quick.
And he had a brother, but at that point, with us just starting out, we weren't willing to take two, but we had friends who took his older brother that lived close, so we could still keep that relationship thriving. And that was a really good placement to start out on. It kind of spoiled us a little bit because it went very smoothly. We had people within the system that very much had our kids' backs and supporting them well, fighting for them. The parents did everything that was expected of them. And it was great because a lot of our training, we had done a mental shift into really taking on the idea that our goal with these children were not to always end in adoption, that our goal actually was to fight for reunification with their parents, that as much as we might desire for them to be a part of our family forever, what's best for these kids is ultimately that they end back up with their mom or their dad, because that's their mom or dad. It's a really hard reality when you know what they've done wrong. But that's what I would want for my own kids. If something were to ever happen, that I would be given that second chance for them to reunify. And so we wanted to fight and advocate not just for the child, but for the whole family. And so we developed a relationship with this baby's mom. And when trust was built a little bit, we started to have her into our home. We started to bring her to church, got to have Bible studies with her, deep conversations. And it was a great first time situation just to see how it can be done well to invite not just the child, but the whole family into our home and our lives, and to see them be reunified after 6 months, and to continue to stay in his life afterwards as well.
Yeah, I mean, we're still, you know, this would be, what, 5 years ago? And we're still getting, you know, updates of pictures for birthdays and stuff like that.
As he heads to kindergarten.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's been really fun to see, kind of see them, you know, come from a rocky spot and now, you know, back together, and everybody seems to be doing well. So
we went on pause for a while. We've always kind of gone on pause after each child to kind of give our home some time to heal, get us into a groove again, and just be ready mentally to accept another phone call. And so we...
Because it is it's a loss.
Yes.
Right? And that's something that we will often hear people say, well, I just couldn't do foster care because I would just care too much, or I would get too attached. Right. And my challenge to anybody that's listening would be that is exactly what you need to do. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's part of counting the costs of foster care is having a healthy attachment, with this child, and demonstrating what a good relationship looks like. Right. And that's hard. That's really tough. And I'll be the first to say it. It's not fun a lot of times. Mm-hmm. Right. Especially if you're having to say goodbye. And so after every placement, like we would go, we'd take a little bit of a hiatus and try to make sure that not only our hearts were in the right spot, but also our kids, right? Because it's really tough on them as well.
Yeah. So we received our next phone call in the fall, October maybe. So that was a few months break, and he was a 3-year-old. They said he was nonverbal. He came with about 10 words. Just the home life had been neglectful and not what you would see in the homes that we're used to. And our kids, again, welcomed him into our home well. This was 2019, though. So as all of us know, 2020 hit, and that slowed down the reunification process drastically, along with some other hiccups in the case. So he ended up being with us for 20 months, and that was a very long 20 months. I feel like there was a lot of regrets during that time, as we talk about attachment, a lot of boundaries that I put up to not become too attached to him that ended up hurting more than helping. I didn't know if he would be adopted or stay in our home, and so I just had held him kind of at arm's length the whole time, which is in fact the opposite of what he needed. He needed us to be all engaged family, and it was also the first time that we were really coming head to head with behaviors and the impact of trauma.
Yeah, I feel like with the first placement that we had was a baby, and so I mean all babies cry, and you know they're not comfortable, and so the trauma portion of that still there, but the trauma portion of it isn't really visible, right, to us, right? With a 3-year-old, like trauma becomes a lot more visible, right? And so there's just a lot of different emotions you could tell were there. And because he wasn't able to communicate mm-hmm. very well, didn't have words, it was really, really hard for us to process with him, for his good and for our good. If we don't know what's going on in his heart, it's really hard for us to have compassion, or the compassion that we should have, right? And so that was one of the challenges that we had with this kid is because of his communication, right? It just made it an additional obstacle to try to get around when it came to communicating and empathizing with what he was going on and understanding, you know, the hurt feelings and stuff that we'd had. Like, I mean, I remember the first night when he came to our house, he basically just laid up in his bed and just cried, right? And we asked him if he was hungry, if he wanted food, and he didn't really say anything. And so we basically just went and got, I think we just got a cheese stick, right? And we gave him a cheese stick, and as he's trying to eat this cheese stick, he is just bawling, right? Just not able to process anything that's going around. He was just taken from his home. He is, he's now in this stranger's home that he just met 5 minutes ago. And he doesn't have an ability to process at all. And so that was a really big challenge.
Yeah, that first night is always the weirdest. You have a new kid in your home who doesn't know you and you don't know him. And it's just a reality that should never be experienced, but you're embracing it. And those first 2 weeks are really rough. It's like welcoming home a new baby. You know, you don't have to go through the postpartum, but just the adjustment on both ends of this new child in our home and that new child adjusting to you, it can be really hard. And there's a lot of players in the game that come into your home during that time. DHS,
pretty much revolving
FCS,
door,
Four Oaks,
like
yes.
Every single day.
So you can't really get used to them very well because there's so many interruptions.
I think that's where our kids have come in really.
Yes.
Like in a huge way, where we have gotten advice from some mentors on the mm-hmm. on the foster care side of things to let the kids show them around the house, right? So let's like have them take them downstairs, like, hey, these are where all the toys are at. This is the dining room. This is the bedroom that you'll stay in. This is where, this mm-hmm. is my bedroom. This is their bedroom, you know, and they go around and just give them a full tour of the house and start playing with them, right? And kind of being that initial icebreaker. And our kids have done just a phenomenal job with loving on all of the placements that we've had.
I was going to say, too, that second child was very much got to experience more the nitty-gritty of foster care and the expectations on us as parents. Because the first one, with just being a baby and mom being so involved, there wasn't much besides the normal there. But with this one, because there was such needs as far as verbal and the age, I mean, we advocating for speech therapy appointments, advocating to get him an IEP and into preschool. That was like a 2 to 3 month push there. He was supposed to go to preschool the first day after spring break, and then nobody went to school after spring break of 2020. But getting him into preschool that fall and meeting with the teacher, like there was a lot more boots on the ground action involvement. And because there's higher needs in a lot of these kiddos, there's a sacrifice there because I'm having to meet, Jeremy's having to meet some of these needs that are greater, sometimes at the cost of forfeiting time with our own kids. And it was, again, we have like a list, I remember writing out, of costs that foster care would have. And I still have it in my drawer and I look at it at times because it's just, it's good to know going in what's going to need to be asked of you and sacrificed. But at the end of the day, know that those are all for good. After number two, we took a pretty long break, almost a year. And then we said yes to two girls this time. This was the first time, obviously, taking in two, which was, we grew to find that this was a lot on our family. We also were taking in a 7-year-old and a 2-year-old. So even the fact that we were taking in an older child was different, exciting. It had a lot of blessings that came with that. But the coolest part is even in that first week, we had a retreat at the end of that week. And the older of the two was dropped off from a visit and joined us at the retreat. And then that night, it grew to be late. She was struggling with bad dreams, which is pretty typical of foster kiddos, especially with all they've gone through. And she had this dream catcher. It's late at night. She's determined that this dream catcher needs to be nailed into the wall of this retreat that we're staying at. And having to reason with her that that wasn't going to happen in the midst of her big emotions and exhausted.
If anybody's tried to reason with a 7-year-old, like, yeah, you know the struggle is real, but then you add in,
it was like 10:30,
the additional emotions and trauma that was there.
Yes.
It was a fair amount.
So we're struggling. I remember standing in the doorway, we're looking at each other like, how we need to get this child to bed. What are we going to do without flipping our lid? And she was in a bunk bed. I remember climbing up into the bunk bed and just putting my hands on each side of her face and telling her to look at me and just proclaiming to her, that dream catcher is going to do nothing for your nightmares. It can do nothing, but you have a God who created your mind and who loves you, and he can protect you from bad dreams. Do you want to pray to him? And in her, you know, big eyes and terrified emotional self just nods back at me, and we prayed over her, and we would pray over her every night after that. And I don't remember her ever. She would tell us.
Yeah, she would tell us.
She never had bad dreams after that. And just to see God provide, and that was really cool.
Yeah, to see answered prayer like that, and especially like an outsider's perspective, like, is just awesome. But the impact that it really made on her, right? Of, hey, there is a God out there. Mm-hmm. That you may not have heard a bunch about, but he loves you, and he is bigger than any bad dream that you could ever have.
Yeah. And we would read the Bible with her every night with Gracie, and it was cool reading it with Gracie too, because she's heard all these Bible stories. But to see this other girl who hadn't heard it, you know, you get to the part in the Bible where Jesus dies and she's like, what? No, like, he can't, you know, the rightful emotions that you should have in there. I mean, we and our children know the end of the story, but she hadn't. And so it was cool to see her just get to experience the truth of the Bible as she was in our home. And that whole case was very rocky and confusing. There were times that we felt like she needed to be home sooner or she needed to be with family sooner. And I remember just crying out to God a lot of, what are you doing? Why is she still with us when she needs to be, when I think she should be with family, when I think she needs to be with back with her dad? And
because that's always an emotion, right? Like, for the I'm not sure if we call it first responders, but for the people that are seeing this child every single day, these mm-hmm. children every single day, like, we know, at least we have a pretty good idea of what's best for them. And I'm not going to say we're all-knowing by any means. And but realistically, like, with this one, there's just a lot of things that I was like, why are they not back with their dad. Like, mm-hmm. I don't understand.
Or with family in some.
Or with family in some regard, right? And so we were actually driving up. We were on vacation. We were driving up. Karen and I, I was very frustrated. we're talking back and forth of the frustration, and you know, we're actually heading up to a cabin that we go to. We were talking about and venting to each other about just how frustrated we were at the system, and it was actually at that same day that Karen got a text message from this girl's aunt saying, like, hey, would there be a possibility that we would be able to come to church with you? And so, absolutely, yes, not a problem. Like, and they started talking, and essentially what happened was when this older child was with her family, every meal she said, we need to pray first, right? We need to pray before we eat. And so that got their children interested in trying to understand what was being discussed, and you know, to what degree they already knew the stories or knew the background. I don't know for sure, but that sparked an interest, mm-hmm. right? It sparked an interest in their kids, and I think consequently sparked an interest in the aunt and uncle. And so through that, we were able to invite them to church and to have them actually like get to know our family a mm-hmm. lot better, which was a huge godsend in the aspect of just being able to see the fruit from what our frustration had been from, right? Yeah. So it was very clear to us that it's like, hey, God's doing something, right? And I'm not sure exactly what he's doing, but he is sovereign even over this situation, right? And just that little glimpse right there was enough to kind of like help us recenter, refocus, and continue on with that placement, even having the frustrations that we had.
Yeah. That whole placement was just an encouragement to us of trusting that God was working in the background that we don't always see, but he's got a reason for his timing. So they went home right before Christmas, and another good long break later, we took in our current placement in this past October. So she's been with us for almost 6 months now. And she has turned 4 in our home, and this placement has been, again, an all new experience, each one of what is our relationship with family looks like, what is our relationship with the child look like, and this has probably been one that's torn at us a little bit more as far as attachment goes. We've, like I mentioned earlier, with our second child, it's really been a learning process for us of how to attach well, knowing that there's a possibility of them leaving and yet kind of playing that manipulative game with our heart of we still need to attach to them. Whether or not they leave, we need to still love them as if they are our own, because that is what they need right now. We are their fill-in mom and dad, and they need us to be fully mom and dad, whether or not that's going to cost us something in the end. And so we've gone through a lot of those emotions this time around.
And I think even with our youngest, we're seeing a lot of emotion there as well. Just because when, you know, basically when she was 3 years old, she's been experiencing loss, right? So a child will come in, she'll bond with this kid, mm-hmm. And then we'll have to say goodbye. And so that's been something that, you know, and I'm sure with our older kiddos too, like I'm sure there's some level of that, just not as expressed quite as well, probably.
Yeah, we know that it's a high cost on them. But again, it's a cost that we believe is worth it, because we've gotten to see, like you mentioned before, them learn how to love sacrificially and serve well in our home and inviting them in.
Yeah, and we're doing it, and we're doing it as a family too, yeah. Right? And we're trying to be as intentional as we can with conversations and with, you know, like all of those breaks that we take, or that I said all the breaks, like the breaks that we take in between, are very intentional to make sure that our kids understand that we're doing this not to just say, you know, to form an attachment and then say goodbye, but it's because of the need that's there, right? So it's inviting our kids into that as well, and not just coming as a dictatorship. Hey, this is what we're going to do, and this is, mm-hmm. you don't have a choice in it. And so each break for us has been kind of a more calculated time to say, okay, that was hard. Mm-hmm. We might need a couple extra months here and there, like to before we just jump into the next one.
Yeah. I would say another important thing with foster care is the fact that we've had community through all of this. Before we hopped in, we had community, yeah. who were also foster parents, who walked us through what to expect. In the midst of it, we've had so many other foster parents who have come alongside of us, who've prayed for us on court days, who've bought me coffees on court dates, who've watched our fosters for us, who understand trauma. And then not just those foster parents, but also those that aren't foster parents, our connection group, our neighbors, who have borne the burden of it, who have brought us meals those first couple weeks when it's really hard, who've prayed over us, who've reminded us of what we've learned throughout foster care, of the truths in the day-to-day when we tend to forget all of those truths. And so community has been essential, and there is no way that we would still be doing foster care if we didn't have that community.
Absolutely.
I feel like the number one way that God has shaped me is by a constant realization of my weakness before Him, where my limitations are, where I am unable to love well or to endure well or to handle something, and seeing where God has been faithful to provide community, where He's been faithful to provide strength in that moment, where He's given peace where it didn't feel like peace was possible, because there, yeah, foster care will wreck you. It will get you to the end of yourself. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, which one of the things, like jumping off of that I think the biggest takeaway for me so far, right, has been you start this journey thinking that you're taking care of these broken mm-hmm. children, right? And I think through this process, you come to the realization that you're just as broken, right?
Yeah.
That we're all in need of a savior, that we're all in need of a lot more help than what we actually think. And so like that dependency that pushes us towards Christ, I think has been a lot stronger in my life because of that.
Yeah. I feel like it's also brought to the surface the fact that we really like control, and we think that we have control. And when you put a child in your home that you don't know how long they'll be in your home, you don't know if you will forever be their parent or not. You don't know what behavior might bubble off the surface in a month. You might not know anything else that will happen in the case, because it changes on a weekly basis. So there's just zero control in your hands. And so it really gets you to depend on God's sovereignty through it and trust in His plan, which our number three and number four taught us that a little bit. But with each one, you're faced with something new, and it's just constant reminder that you are not in control, but God is.
Yeah, and I think what we're called to as foster parents is to take that step in obedience,
mm-hmm.
right? Knowing that there's going to be costs, knowing that it's not going to be fun a lot of times, but knowing that ultimately, like, it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth it for our lives. It's worth it for our kids' lives. It's worth it for these children's lives that we're inviting into our home. And And yeah, like it's not free. It's not a, you do this and everything's going to be rainbows and lollipops. It's, like it's a everyday struggle, right? But to care for the lost and the least, is what we're being called to, right? And I think that's been the, you know, the biggest challenge that God has put probably in our lives, at least to date, right?
Yep.
Oh man, Keystone, I hope you enjoyed that story. And we encourage you to go listen to more of the Keystone Stories of the Keystone Story podcast. Make sure you subscribe to that. Thanks for listening. And it's our prayer that God would use all the people of Keystone to serve the vulnerable, those that need it, the orphans, those in foster care, and God would use all of our resources and abilities to do that. Thanks so much for being a part of our conversation today. If you'd like to know more about Keystone in general or hear sermons or listen to more conversations, please visit KeystoneLife.com. Until next time, keep the conversation going.